Hi, welcome to Who's in the Kitchen on WDRT 91.9 FM and streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org. Dirt radio from the ground up. We're broadcasting from Viroqua, Wisconsin, in the Driftless area, which is a southwestern corner of Wisconsin and a very, very beautiful area. And this is a show about food, and our topic today is for love of hazelnuts. And I've got a wonderful guest here who is on the Hazelnut, American Hazelnut Corporation board. And so she's going to tell us about her involvement in it, how she got interested, and what she does, and some of their new products, and perhaps some ideas about the growing of hazelnuts, cooking with hazelnuts, and all that kind of good stuff. So my guest is Pam Saunders, and welcome, Pam, to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Great. Well, I've had Brad Nimchick on a few years ago when the American Hazelnut Company started, and he was kind of the voice of the company, but I guess there's a board. And your position now, Pam, is what?
I'm now the secretary of the board, and I'm also involved in the actual labor of doing the nuts, and I'm also a grower.
Okay. That's great. So we can cover all aspects of that. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I first moved here about 50 years ago, we moved on to a farm that really hadn't been farmed for a long time. No water, no electricity, and a very bare little farm road that went up. And so we kind of just made a little homestead there, but there were lots of wild hazelnuts. And they've disappeared. I don't know where they went. It's not like we cultivated the living daylights out of our farm, but they have kind of gone away. But I know we were so excited, we thought we'll go out and harvest them, and every little nut had a little hole drilled in it by some predator. So what happened to the native hazelnuts?
They are here. They're still here. We have a hillside that's covered with hazelnuts, and right now the beaver are tackling them and enjoying them.
Oh.
But they are native in the upper Midwest. They are all the way up in northern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin. And so what we're trying to do is develop an industry that is built on the native varieties and hybrids. So the kind of hazelnuts that are grown in Europe, in Turkey, and even in Oregon are the European variety, and we are growing a native hybrid here. So it's a different nut. It's really a different nut.
It is.
It is. There are significant agronomic challenges with getting a hazelnut that you can plant and you can have a predictability to the kind of yields that you'll get. So we're still in that phase of understanding and developing the kind of cultivars and the varieties that will be easy to scale up. Their extension, UW Extension and University of Minnesota Extension are both very involved in that aspect of the business. It turns out that every hazelnut, if you planted it, would turn out a different kind of bush. It's like apples in that every seed in that apple would produce a different kind of tree with different kinds of yields and characteristics. The thing with apples is that you can graft them. You cannot graft hazelnuts.
Oh, okay.
So it's a different kind of cultivation. You have to propagate from cuttings or tissue culture. We have started, all of us that are in the business now, have started with nuts that are, we know who the mother is, and that mother plant that we harvest from is, in our plantings, we flag all our best plants. And then in a row with plants, there could be good bush, and then a bush that doesn't produce anything. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit the state of the business now. But still, we've got growers who have thousands of plants, and we're developing the ways to harvest them. And many of us are playing with mound layering and trying to propagate our best plants so that we can replace those duds with ones that yield well. I think that in our particular planting, it could be that the 80-20 rule applies, or maybe it's the 30-70 rule, where 70% of our production comes from 30% of the plants, that kind of thing. But the folks that are interested in it for a variety of reasons. And I think that the hazelnut, the fact that it's native to this area, it really fits into that regenerative crop kind of concept. It takes about 7 years for a hazelnut bush to produce any quantity of nuts. So,
oh, that might leave me out. I'm not sure if I'd still be alive.
It's a long mm-hmm. view.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people who see it as a potential real a crop that could return something to the bottom line.
Right, and this is a perennial. How long do they live?
I am not positive about that, but after several years, they will begin to put on more wood than they do into their nuts. So sometimes a cultivation technique is to coppice them, which means cutting them down at the ground and then letting them resprout and regrow.
Oh, cool.
But then that'll take a few years for them to come back. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I was involved in early grape growing actually before the Extension Service really took that on and really sponsored that. But it seems like there's a lot in common with the grapes and mm-hmm. trying to get grapes that grow here in Wisconsin
mm-hmm.
and, working with the French hybrid grapes that they had to develop up at the University of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing, you can't grow grapes from seeds because they'll just be all every which way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah,
mm-hmm.
same thing, the grafting and layering and all that kind of thing.
Right.
And culling, getting rid of the duds. Mm-hmm. So it sounds, really comparable, and it's really nice to know that there is some Extension Service support for this. So I'm so excited about this. I'm talking with Pam Saunders of the American Hazelnut Company, which is really centered in Gays Mills, Wisconsin, of all places. So I was asking you, is it really the American Hazelnut Company? Is this the place where hazelnuts are being grown in the United States?
It's not the only place, but it is the only company or effort right now that is marketing the Midwest version of hazelnuts.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a robust hazelnut industry in Oregon, but it's quite different than the way that our growers grow. For one thing, it's the European variety. And most of their production is going to China as an ingredient or overseas. They haven't really focused on the domestic market. And North Americans aren't very used to using hazelnuts like they are in Europe. But in Oregon, the cultivation is they typically prune those hazelnut bushes, which have a natural bushy kind of a formation. And they prune them, they cultivate them as single stem trees, and then typically they make the ground underneath the hazelnuts be dead, and then they allow the hazelnuts to drop and then they suck them up. So what that implies is that there is a much greater
use of herbicides.
Oh, gosh. And it's a very dusty proposition at harvest time, apparently. I've not observed it, but it is a big business out there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fundamentally different. The nuts are larger, and our nuts are quite small. But you'll see, I brought for you some snacks that we can talk about a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
And our size of hazelnut is perfect for that snacking. Those are flavored kernels, and they're small and just right for snacking.
The size of a chickpea, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, something like that.
Yeah. They aren't the larger hazelnuts.
They aren't the large hazelnuts that you find in confections or maybe even in your nut bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a different industry. We want to take advantage of the characteristics of our...
Would you say then this is an organic product?
I couldn't say that. It is not certified organic, and our growers, we have 26 members of the company, which is an LLC. So it has multiple members of the LLC. It operates kind of like a co-op, but it's not a co-op legal structure.
Mm-hmm.
So those growers are bringing in their husked nuts, and I don't believe anybody is using any kind of herbicide or insecticide. We have some challenges with, there are some weevils, like you were saying earlier, that, you know, you can see a hole in the nut, and that means that there's an insect that is enjoying the, has burrowed out from inside the nut, likely. I think that, you know, I can't say that mm-hmm. we are certified organic, and we're not mm-hmm. making that claim. And that is a step that we could take. We don't have that grower standard.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly possible.
But it sounds like you have a reduced use of chemicals, reduced.
I would be really surprised if any of our growers mm-hmm. are using any kind of chemicals at all.
Well, I have questions going in a million directions.
Oh, good.
But, I mean, okay, it's a bush that grows to be about, I mean, in nature, does it grow to be about 4 or 5 feet, maybe?
Taller. In our planting, it can be challenging for me to reach the upper branches
to
harvest, mm-hmm. but they're quite pliable. So the harvest... In a planting like ours, we only have 200 bushes. So it's you know, a number of hours, a good number of hours, 30 to 40 hours mm-hmm. to pick our planting. And you have to do that and beat the rodents, the squirrels and the chipmunks.
That's the main pest control, is get out there in time.
That's right.
Timing the
harvest.
Because
that is, mm-hmm. yeah. And if you pick them too early, they don't separate well from their husk. And if you wait too long, the critters will beat you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the trick. But what I wanted to get to is that one of the roles of extension is to help with the harvesting and mechanized harvesting. So I might bring somewhere between 100 and 200 pounds of in-shell nuts to be processed. But we have growers who have up to 1,000 pounds. So that's not practical to do that in a hand operation. So blueberry pickers are being adopted for use in hazelnut plantings.
Oh.
So if people are interested in cultivating and getting in on this, they have to learn about row spacing. And there's a lot of material that has been developed
mm-hmm.
About the right way to set up a planting.
Yeah, so that you can use this equipment and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And these harvesters are big hulking machines. And so, you know, it implies that you have to really have the setup of your planting mm-hmm. done right, so there's enough turning space and all that kind of thing.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's start just with the beginning of a hazelnut. If you wanted to start a plantation, you would buy cuttings, you would buy plants that already rooted. What would you do?
There are people that are selling stock right now, and that stock is important, even if it's not always true. It's important to have that stock for pollen. So hazelnuts put out a catkin, which is the source of the pollen. And you can see that. That's one of the ways you can identify in the wild that hazelnut. It's mm-hmm. it's a long, maybe 1 to 2 inch...
drooping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the that's the source of the pollen for uh-huh. what's going to come in the spring, which are tiny little flowers. And they come, like, really early, like in March. So, therefore, they're frost-hardy. So that's why you find them here and way farther north than here even.
Mm-hmm.
So
If you were going to try and start with hazelnuts, you'd contact the American Hazelnut Company, or would you contact
actually our role. So there are, you know, we're there to be a market to help you feel like it's a good idea for you to plant hazelnuts,
okay,
because there's going to be somewhere to go with them. I can mention some supporting organizations. One of them is the Savannah Institute, which is located in, well, they've got, I think Dodgeville is where they're located. And they're a sponsor of Hazelnut Cluster and have access to a lot of important information. There's an outfit called the Upper Midwest Hazelnut Development Initiative. And so if you Google Upper Midwest Hazelnuts, you'll come up with that website. And that's extension sponsored, and there's a wealth of information there. There are purveyors of seed stock. Mark Shepherd's Forest Ag is one. There are Badger Set, Redfern Farms. There's a number of sources of plant material that are available.
So do you get cuttings, or do you get rooted cuttings, or what?
Ours were, I'm not sure how many. I wasn't actually living on the place that where I am now when they were planted. I came when they were little, what do we call that? When they're like a year old plant with roots on it. It's escaping me what that word is, like probably a year old plant. We just did some mound layering this year. And so we've got about 30 little cuttings that have some roots on them, and we'll see how they come through in the spring.
So layering is like laying the branch down into the soil and letting it root, or what?
You cut it close, most of the plant. You leave some of the stems so that it's able to get nutrition. But you use sawdust to layer it up, and then you scar that stem and use rooting hormone in order to stimulate the growth of the roots.
That'll
then grow into that sawdust, which is a very, it's friendly to get the roots out without disturbing them. It's not like packed soil.
Right.
So, but there are technical bulletins about how to do this. And there's new learning all the time. Lois Braun is University of Minnesota Extension agent working on this, and Jason Fischbach is the UW Extension agent working on this. So, yeah,
wonderful.
Which is wonderful. Yeah.
Great support. That's
very great.
Just wonderful.
Yep.
So your organization is really for the people who are already growing hazelnuts and want, or are thinking about doing it and want to know, could they sell them anywhere?
That's right.
You know, is there a market?
That's right.
So,
yeah, so when I came to where I live now, and with my partner, he had planted hazelnuts. And I said, what are these for? And he said, well, I don't know, the critters, maybe I'll eat a few. And I was, I'm a farmer at heart. And I said, this looks like a crop to me. So that's how I got involved, is because, you know, I was watching these hazelnuts grow from year one to about year eight. And I thought, well, you know, this, I'm going to get involved in this because it is, it kind of goes along with my background. So.
So if you're just growing them for yourself, you would just go out with your hands and a little basket or a bag around your neck or something like that and just pick with your hands?
We use apple picking bags.
And you just rub with your hands and they come off, or what?
You pick them, and
you
they are
them.
In a husk.
Yes.
The husk looks like kind of like a bear claw. And then you can wiggle that husk, try and see if the nut is loose in there. And that's when you know that the critters are going to start going after them.
So starting to loosen from the husk.
Yeah. And then it's up to the grower to de-husk. So that's a whole operation,
right?
The de-husking.
What do you have to do? Do you bring them inside and work on them in the house? or someplace warm?
First you dry them. Well, okay. there's a lot of research, kind of homegrown research being done right now. People have made their own dehuskers, barrel huskers that are made out of a plastic barrel with some fins. But we've also, there are a couple of Turkish huskers that are in the area that are run off of a PTO. And, you know, you run them through and it's theoretically spits out the husks and from one end and the nuts on another end. Mm. But basically, the conventional wisdom has been that you dry them so that husk comes off easily in those mechanisms.
So would these be on screens or on tables? And would you do it in an outside shed? Or where do you dry them?
Yeah, you have to have space and shelving, you know, screen space okay. on which uh-huh. to dry them. But recently, people have been experimenting with husking them green. So the jury is out on what is the best way to do that.
Would they be totally ripe?
Pardon me?
If the husks are still green, is the nut mature?
Yeah, yeah. If the mm-hmm. If the husk separates, allows the nut to drop out, then the nut is
ready. Okay.
Yeah, it
okay.
is ready. That's mm-hmm. the way you know. But yeah, so we'll see. That's one of the several challenges is the dehusking mm-hmm. and then the shelling. So
oh yes.
right. So we accept the in-shell nuts that have been husked from our members okay. and from our non-members. Our members get a premium. But we welcome all nuts. And our growers, we have nuts coming from Minnesota, from Iowa, from Illinois, and Wisconsin, pretty much. So we receive them at Gay's Mills currently, and we sanitize them. So we're rinsing them in a sanitizing solution, and then we heat them to dry them off, and then we send them up to Ashland. To be shelled.
Oh.
So that's, mm-hmm. yeah. So the yield of that kernel to the shell is a little less than 30%. So, yeah, we have the whole shelling operation is a big deal, and it's where you can drive out a lot of costs if you get some efficiency introduced. And so that has been where Extension has been really plugged in, is in this shared shelling facility in Ashland, really, where there's sorting that goes on, size sorting. Ours, when we get our nuts back, they are sorted into different sizes that we use for different things. We use one size for our flavored kernels. We use a different size for the roasted kernels that we sell, just roasted kernels. And then we press for oil and we make flour out of the byproduct of that oil.
Oh, wow. That just sounds really exciting, interesting. I wish I were younger. It just sounds like something that it's like a growing industry and there's really great possibilities for it.
Yep.
Now, what do you do with the shells? I noticed I was there one time at the facility. There were bags and bags of shells, and they were just kind of selling them for mulch or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, mm-hmm. I had an idea. I was wondering if they can use them for litter, for kitty litter or something like that, because they do that with some other nut shells now. So I didn't know if they thought about yeah. it. But you do have quite a bit of shell for each nut.
There is. And we have found a couple of outlets. And, you know, in any kind of business like that, it's really important to find uses for those byproducts, especially when we own those shells. And so we have sold them. And I can't tell you the exact use of the buyers that we've found. But the good news is that when we press, We get a oil comes out one end and a press cake comes out at the other end, an extrusion of the nut. And it is very high protein. You've extracted the oil. And that's what we're grinding to make flour. So we make use of that. And then the oil settles out and there is a sort of a sludgy product that's left behind. We call it puree. And we have a market for that. So once we get the nuts, we have a market for all of it.
The oil and flour and then this puree, would that be like kind of like peanut butter? Or would it be drier?
It is like peanut butter. It's mm-hmm. a lot like peanut butter, like kind of an oily peanut butter. And we've got a customer in the Twin Cities that makes a sugar-free ice cream. It's called Love, L-U-V. And they buy all of our all of the byproduct from our oil making.
Great.
So that is great. But, you know, shells is something that we need to work on to be more consistent with that. We also have the tiny nuts that that aren't worth cracking because it ends up to be more shell than nut. We've done participated in some feeding trials with hogs.
Oh, I was wondering because eat acorns, right?
Yeah,
like nuts.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, sure, that would be great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the increased efficiency that we've gotten in the last couple years has driven out several dollars from our cost and has made it possible for us to be a little more efficient and more competitive in the marketplace.
That sounds great. I'm talking to Pam Saunders. She's from Lafarge?
Our place is between Lafarge and Viroqua, out on County Road S, just south of 82. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but you go in several times a week to the food and what is it not? What is it called?
Kickapoo Culinary Center
in Gays Mills, and mm-hmm. that's kind of the headquarters of the production.
Right, and what you probably saw a few years ago is when they were using a very small kind of a grinding thing to shell the nuts, and we're at a different level of production. That's now moved up to Ashland. And
okay, so when a person who's grown the nuts and they've husked them, they take them to Gays Mills. Gays Mills has a trucker or something that takes those up to Ashland.
This
is one of the services that you deliver to Gays Mills, and Gays Mills.
Yeah, once we pay we pay for the nuts.
You pay.
Yeah. And right now we are some of us are quote volunteering our labor, but we're also earning ownership in the company while we get the company on its feet. We've had folks put capital into the company. And they have, you know, they own units in the company. And we have paid labor in the KCC, Kickapoo Culinary Center. And we will again. We're just in a phase where we have one paid person who is doing social media for us, a 20-something. Which is great. And we've recently gotten a couple of significant grants. So those grants, in combination with the fact that we've got some new products and we've about doubled the amount of nuts that we've been able to buy from our members and non-members. So we just approved a budget that is double for 2022 what it was in 2021. And so one of the grants is going to help us with some equipment, and another part of that grant is going to help us with some sales effort, paying somebody to be taking care of the accounts that we're in. Mm-hmm. So we have roughly about a third of our business is wholesale business. In other words, in the co-ops, in some stores, we're in Metcalf's, and some other stores, Good Harvest. And then another third is online, and then another third, roughly, I'm just giving you a rough idea, it goes to ingredient sales. So selling nuts to people that are going to use it in their bakery, in their
ice cream.
in their ice cream. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, is this sounding like a viable crop for people to grow? I mean, those listeners out here, they're wondering,
right?
Should I get hazelnuts and put some of my acreage into that? Why would you encourage them to do that?
I think it is going to be. I think that you've got to have a long view just because of how long it takes. But we do have people who are looking for that kind of opportunity on their land. And I can't give you any return on investment figures or anything like that. But we have people waiting in the wings. Some of them are waiting for the right genetics before they plant. We're encouraging people to plant borders of the seedlings for sure. My fellow board member with whom I do the production work, he's got 8 acres of them, I believe. It is. We think that it is going to be definitely a going concern. I should talk too a little bit about the clusters, which is kind of a cute name. Given that hazelnuts grow in clusters, but there are grower clusters
around the
upper Midwest. And those clusters are independent from us, but we have members that are part of each cluster. For example, Savannah Institute sponsors a cluster, and we have maybe quarterly meetings to talk about the cultivation and the genetics and the harvest, that aspect. There's another Central Wisconsin group. There's one in Minnesota that is sponsored by an organization called Rural Advantage. There's one in Iowa. So there are, I think, 5 different clusters that are geographic clusters, so that you can find folks that are that have similar interests, and you can find that support. And of course, we're interested, and we want to be the end result of that. Here's how you do it. Here's how you start it. Here's how you grow. Here's how you tend your planting. Here's how you harvest it. Here's how you husk it, and then here's where you sell it to. Mm-hmm. And we want to be that. So we're very interested in being involved in those clusters as well.
Great. So you're listening to WDRT 91.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org. You can listen to this program on our podcast, as well as a number other of programs from Who's in the Kitchen. Now we have a little archive building up, and you can listen to shows in past few weeks and months. And I'm Philothea Beeson. I'm the host of the show. And I'm talking with Pam Saunders from Verocal Lafarge, who is involved in the American Hazelnut Company. And its headquarters really are in Gays Mills. And this has been just really an exciting project to watch develop. It's probably... when was the American Hazelnut Company actually formed? 5 years ago? 10 years ago?
2014 okay. was the date of organization. Mm-hmm. And Brad Nemchik was the primary organizer. The president of our board is Mike Lilia, who lives over in the Twin Cities area. Mm-hmm. We have a 7-member board. And as I said, it's an LLC.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm really interested in, now the products that you're making and what, who buys them, where are they available? If someone is a confectionery, do they, can they contact you and say, we want some of your oil or your flour or whatever? So just tell us about the marketing and the distribution.
Sure. Sure. That's always the challenge with any new product that you're trying to get on the shelf. We think that the co-ops are a natural for us. You know, because of the local slash regional character of our products, what you just picked up over there, Philothea, is our Hazel Snackers. And we developed those under a grant. And they are flavored kernels. We've got two flavors right now. One is called Spicy Maple. We use maple syrup from Dan Badke right here. And then the other one is called Roasted Rosemary. And they're like snack crack, really. They're delicious. So the other, you know, we really marketed those heavily as stocking stuffers around Christmas, and they were great, very popular for that. And there are some local grocers or regional grocers like Metcalfe's and Good Harvest that have picked them up. We are online, and so you can order our products online. We have a website called AmericanHazelnutCompany.com, and we have an email address, AmericanHazelnutCompany@gmail.com. Yeah, we've got a third flavor in the hopper. It's called Simply Salted. It's just really kind of a stripped down version of the roasted kernel for snacking.
So are they always roasted? Are hazelnuts usually roasted?
They usually are. Mm-hmm. We have some people that order raw. Because they want to do their own roasting. The ones that we sell an 8-ounce and a 16-ounce roasted kernel. They're lightly roasted. I keep mine in the freezer, and then when I want to use them, I will give them a little swirl in a cast iron pan on the stovetop just to crisp them up, and I use them that way.
Mm-hmm. How do you personally use hazelnuts?
So we also have a flour that I referred to before, and it's very fine and it's high protein, and of course it's gluten free, so you can't do a 1-to-1 substitution for a wheat flour. But I like to put an inclusion in when I bake cookies because it gives it a really nice flavor, and the flour is very fine. We're just getting delivery on a new flour mill shortly, which was very exciting. So anything that you would use a non-gluten...
Say almond flour. It's comparable to an almond flour if you've baked with that.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you wouldn't use that exclusively, possibly.
Right.
But mixed with other flours.
Right.
You could make waffles. I think waffles would be good with that flour.
That would
flour.
Be good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be fun. I haven't tried that. Used chopped up hazelnuts in my cheesecake crust, and that's wonderful.
Oh, wouldn't that be
really
great?
Really wonderful, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So is that just pure hazelnuts, or would you mix them with something else to make
well,
the crust?
Well, I use them as an inclusion in my recipe that also has, butter and sugar and good stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't tried it just with flour because it won't stick together in the same way that a flour-based crust would.
So, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The oil is we sometimes say it's use it like you would olive oil, but really it's even better because it's got a slightly higher smoke point. So it's suitable for using in dressings and anywhere you would use olive oil, but you can saute in it as well. If I'm roasting vegetables, I'll use hazelnut oil, and it has a lovely nutty flavor and smell. It's really a nice thing. If you've got a nice bread, you can use it for dipping, dipping your bread in, just like you would with olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
We have a bunch of recipes on our website. However, a lot of them currently, until we get around to kind of curating them a little better, many of them are metric because they're from Europe. because that's where you'll find a ton of recipes for hazelnuts, because they're really used to using them in their cooking. So if you're not afraid of metric, you will find a lot of recipes on our website.
Mm-hmm. Gee, I see a lot of opportunities for people to work for this company, but is there any money to pay people?
Yeah.
You got some grants.
We got some grants, and so the budget that we just put together has us hiring a pair of people during 2022. And if this sounds like something that you would like to do, I would love to hear about it, because it's production work, but it's heart work too. It's a great product, and it feels really good to be doing the work. The work that I'm doing right now, I'm retired. This is not long term. It's just it's trying to give a boost really to the company while we launch these new products and when we have salespeople to work for us. One exciting thing that we're going to do is we've applied to be at the Mill City Farmers Market, which is a premier farmers market. It's not just any farmers market.
Where is that?
In Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the premier farmers market of the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do that, and I think that'll give us a lot of exposure to the folks that we want to reach with our products.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Can people make their own oil, or is that really a hard process? You need special equipment to get the oil out of the nuts.
You do need special equipment. You need equipment that is several thousand dollars. And then the press cake is like the hardest substance known to man. You need a very robust mill to mill the byproduct into the flour. So yes, it's specialized.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rather slow. We've had, in terms of developing new products, we have a couple in the hopper. We are working with an outfit called Perennial Kitchen in out of the Twin Cities. They're developing some, like the pancake mix kind of thing that would have, and you saying waffles, you're right on the right track there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are...
Oh, a mix would be a good idea. Yeah.
So you kind of coach people in that way, in a very direct way.
Well, I'm thinking about these. We have these wonderful apple orchards that millions of people visit every year.
Mm-hmm.
And the products in there are usually from Door County or someplace else. And I'm thinking, why don't we have local products in our
We are at those places.
Okay.
Yes.
Because that's where you have tourists and they want to buy something special from the area, and you have a cute package. This is absolutely adorable.
Mm-hmm.
Little stocking stuffers and hostess gifts and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to hear that you're selling locally too.
Oh, that's absolutely.
That's great.
I just stopped in and talked to Sally at the co-op, and I'm bringing her a case of oil Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So yes.
Well, is the price comparable to a good olive oil, or is it really a gourmet item?
It's a gourmet item, to be honest. We did put our oil on special. We're going to play with that pricing. I came from a food business background. I worked at Organic Valley for 20 years. So I have a lot of exposure to every aspect of the food business. So we're going to look at our pricing and shift it around a little bit. And, we have to make margin. We have to get to a place where we are actually making money and not be grant dependent, and we can pay people for what they do. So that's the midterm goal. That's the short-term goal, really. Yeah. The oil is high priced. So you would use it...
Sparingly,
yes.
But a little goes a long way, because it has a nice flavor.
It does.
You do notice it. It's not totally bland. Mm-hmm. Not totally.
Yeah, when you take a whiff, you really get the hazelnut, mm-hmm. the warm, toasty hazelnut smell. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's a lovely product. My partner and I run guest cabins, and I have taken to putting a pair of the hazel snackers out for our guests because they are pretty much the right demographic, and they come from Chicago and Madison and Milwaukee and the Twin Cities. So I can tell that they are now ordering.
That is great. That's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to see, well, this is like another business in our community that really is growing from our people and our land and bringing money into our region. It's really nice. I've been involved with Sue Noble at the Food Enterprise Center for a long time, and that's, you know, that's her goal, is let's be a little bit more resilient and let's grow things here and use people here, you know, rather than just depending on big companies and big employers that don't have much loyalty to our land, our way of life. And so this just fits in so beautifully.
And one thing you bring to mind is thinking about the attributes of growing a perennial crop like this, where you're not tilling up the soil. You may be mowing in between the rows, but you're not tilling it up. You are sequestering big amounts of carbon. You are reducing erosion, and you are, you know, maintaining the moisture of the ground. And it's not, you know, a heavy feeder that you have to feed fertilizer to, mm-hmm. In that way. So when I look out on our landscape and see the place that the hazelnuts have, it's just it's a good feeling that it's contributing mm-hmm. In those ways.
That's really a good point. Mm-hmm. And do they like to be, I don't know, near pasture, near fences? Do they like to be near water? They, you know, what's the location that would be best for them? Are they make good fence rows? Are they, you grow them in rows so that you can harvest efficiently, or do you use them as landscaping? I mean, what?
You certainly could. They're beautiful in the fall. Mm-hmm. They've got a beautiful sort of orangey red. The foliage is really lovely, and people do use them that way. You know, if they've just got plantings in the yard, and it's part of it, they can be a great part of a natural, you know, native planting in mm-hmm. a landscape. Mm-hmm. And you can beat the critters and have a few nuts too. But yeah, they definitely have a place mm-hmm. at all scales. And as I say, there are people that are putting in very large plantings because they see the possibilities here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love driving by, try to remember the name of the business, out on County C, which is a lot of perennials, John Zayer's business there. Mm-hmm. What mm-hmm. is the name of that? Star Valley. Mm-hmm. There is something so beautiful about our land, because it's so hilly and everything, mm-hmm. to see things planted in rows like that, perennial crops planted mm-hmm. in rows. It does remind me of Italy, you know, vineyards and olive orchards and things like that, mm-hmm. where you have a crop that comes up in those same rows every year, and mm-hmm. it's just so beautiful.
Yeah, and there are people that are not focused on the commercial aspect, but instead on the landscape aspect. And some people will have them be a cover for livestock, who then will benefit from the nuts dropping. There is a company in Minnesota, out of Northfield, called Tree Range Chickens, and they are growing their chickens under hazelnuts. Which is kind of interesting.
Aww, and it gives them shade.
And the chickens, you know, offer some fertilizer. Mm-hmm. And yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And we may.
Permaculture crop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we may, I'm acquainted with those folks too, and we are going to look at maybe some ways that we could work together where they have nuts that are available for harvest.
Great. Well, why don't you give us, before the show is just about over, give us some of the links that you gave at the beginning of the show.
Sure.
Where people can find out more about how to get started and the different clusters that are available to meet with people and...
Sure.
Your information at the American Hazelnut Company.
So. Sure. If you're thinking about growing hazelnuts, I would go to this website, the Upper Midwest Hazelnut Development Initiative, which is kind of a mouthful, but I think if you Google Upper Midwest Hazelnut, you will get there. If you're a grower in this area, Savannah Institute is sponsoring a cluster. David Bruce is heading that up. And Savannah Institute, you could Google that and get there. And I participate in that cluster, and we meet roughly quarterly. There are field days that are put on by Extension. There is an Upper Midwest Hazelnut Conference that is coming up March 4th and 5th in, I believe it's Winona. But again, you would be able to find that information. And they probably are holding off a little bit based on whether they will be virtual or in person. In past years, they've been in person, and it's a two-day conference. Mm-hmm. AmericanHazelnutCompany.com is where you can order hazelnuts. And there's also a section on growing in there. And encouraging people to become part of our a member of our organization, and then
say Extension, does that mean your county agent? You could call a Vernon County agent or Crawford County agent, and they'd know, they'd be able to refer you or give you printed material.
But the Extension agent who's portfolio is largely hazelnuts is Jason Fishbach, and he is out of Bayfield and Ashland counties. So that's kind mm-hmm. of why the shelling operation is up there.
I see.
And there's several pieces of equipment and expertise that are involved there. And he's probably reachable, but he would be, he operates the Upper Midwest Hazelnut Initiative. Mm-hmm. Development Initiative website. So that's really mm-hmm. where you want to go if you want to become a grower.
Well, thank you so much. Do you have any other special recipes or things, ways you like to use hazelnut products you want to share with us in the last few minutes?
Well, I'm really a fan of these new flavored hazelnuts that we have, and one great way to use them is as a salad topper. They are the whole kernel that's flavored, but if you chop them up, and you know what a nice nutty addition can do for a salad, and these are just perfect for that. So I hope you take yours home and try them that way.
I will. I think I want a whole bunch of these to give to people. Yes.
They're great hostess gifts.
Are they in your trunk of your car?
Well, I'll tell you what. What you're looking at there is a very homespun looking package
mm-hmm.
That we literally have to do by hand, and we are just about to order a pre-printed bag, so it won't be as homespun looking, but it will take a lot of the labor out of the packaging. Mm-hmm. So we're waiting to launch them in more retail locations until we have that bag.
Mm-hmm.
This label has a tent that's stapled on. I don't like the idea of staples on food packaging. I'm not gonna do that. So we are about to mm-hmm. Become more aggressive with our marketing of that product.
Mm-hmm. Now I remember a few years ago there was like a little gift package that had some nuts and some oil and some flour. Do you still have that?
We do.
If you go on our sweet package.
If you go on our website, mm-hmm. we've got what we call a snack pack, mm-hmm. which is the oil and the roasted kernels, and then we have a chef pack, which is the oil and the flour. Mm-hmm.
So that makes a nice gift too, and introducing mm-hmm. people to, you know, just the whole world of hazelnuts and mm-hmm. what to do with them.
It's true.
I think it's just so cool that this is happening right here in the Driftless area.
I do too. I'm excited about it.
Yeah. Yes. Thanks so much for being with us, Pam. I've been talking to Pam Saunders, and this you've been listening to Who's in the Kitchen, and we've been talking about the wonderful world of hazelnuts, and the headquarters is right here in Crawford County. So thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, good. And you can tune in to Who's in the Kitchen every Saturday at noon and listen live, or you can listen on the internet. And you can also go to our website at wdrt.org and listen to this show and previous shows on Who's in the Kitchen. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll be talking again next week.